It feels so good to get unfiltered and unfettered. And now, here's Tony and Fran.
And from the Monolith Studio 1B, this is your arrogantly politically incorrect co-host, Tony the Bully Opinionist, coming at you with UFUF 107, along with my co-host, a man who is a live-tweeting mofo, the Pope of the podcast, Sir Francis One. Fran, good evening.
Hey, good evening. That was fun. I felt like I wasn't keeping up as much last night, but...
Well, I know you had a little incident there where your child was sick, and you came back and you said, what did I miss? And I tweeted you a dog fight.
Yeah, and everyone was railing about it. Like, I can't believe I missed that. So my kids decided to start blowing chunks all over the place.
Nice.
A minute or two into... Well, actually, I missed the opening. But then we got them squared away, and so... then I just felt like I was playing catch-up all night. It wasn't on my game as well as I was on the first one.
It's prime entertainment. It was prime, and obviously,
it wasn't good entertainment. It was prime, but it
hardcore
good.
Politics tonight. We're going to talk about the debate, so we're going to get there. We're going to talk our top. We're going to do a top five list tonight. I labeled it our top five debate finishers. What I really think it is who's in the top five right now?
Yeah.
Who's in the top five? So we'll talk about that. We're going to read some Hillary email tonight, and that's going to be fun, because I've got some good ones. Another episode of I'm Running for President, our popular game show in which cash and prizes can be awarded. have never been. We'll do an Oh No You Didn't, and Signs of the Apocalypse tonight is frightening on both counts.
It is.
I almost hate to do it to people, because it's like... We have such an uplifting, entertaining podcast, and then
we're gonna give people signs of doom. Yeah.
So we got a big podcast for you tonight. We've been listening to this. We're a day late because you live tweeted the debates, and I was tweeting on my own account and following yours. So we wanted to be able to talk about the debates tonight. Fran, before we go to shotgunning the news, I just have one last thing that I want to talk about.
Okay.
I want to say, Francis, I think you're fantastic. You're fantastic. Your family, they're terrific. They're terrific. I just want to make the greatest podcast ever. We're gonna make the podcast great again, Francis, by making a great podcast. How are we gonna do that, Francis? We're just gonna do it. We're gonna do it. That's all.
We're gonna have a big H on the front of our studio. Hup and Trump.
Okay, boys, let's get started. Give me both barrels and shotgun that news.
Starting out tonight, Francis, we got a full-fledged refugee crisis.
Yeah.
A serious humanitarian situation.
It's been turned into a political football, as most things are in this country. Glenn Beck has weighed in. Have you seen... Glenn Beck said on his radio program, he will smuggle refugees into the country illegally. So the dude who's been railing against...
Why is he going to do that?
Because he believes the Syrian Christians are being persecuted. So he's not smuggling all Syrian refugees. If he comes across two refugees, one who's a Christian and one who's a Muslim boy, like let's say they're five-year-old boys, he's going to take the Christian kid and leave the other kid there to be croaked. And he's going to smuggle the Christian kid in illegally into the country. So there's a clear civil war starting among the Tea Party pundits. These are like radio and TV guys who associate themselves with the Tea Party. So Breitbart, you know, the famed dude who croaked and he left his website behind, they are now blasting Glenn Beck. And you know, Fox News hasn't taken a shot at him yet, but you can feel it coming. Because Beck is basically saying, I am going to harbor illegal aliens. I mean, if you water that down, he's basically saying...
So that's just a grandstand move to make a point.
Right.
So
he's saying America should be taking refugees, and they should be taking the Christian Syrian refugees. So, you know...
I'm not even sure
his heart's in the right place on this. I don't know.
Well,
but this is what this has turned into. It's just a giant...
Well, it is. And I don't... I mean, I don't... Yeah, that's an interesting point. I don't want to go down that path. I mean, you know, it's interesting that the Arab countries are not taking any of the refugees.
Right.
They're all fleeing to Europe.
Not only are they taking them, they're saying, don't come here.
They're saying, don't come here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So Saudi Arabia, who's admittedly it's a desert, but they're oil rich with millions of dollars and could probably find a place to house some people.
Yeah.
Not taking anybody in.
No. This is where the sport you hate the most, golf, comes into play here. They play a thing called the Dubai Desert Classic, and it is an oasis in the middle of it. Tell me they can't, in a
they
month.
They built an island.
Yeah.
They built an island.
They built a green golf course in the middle of the desert. They could build a facility to take in some refugees. And I would dare say that already exists that they could use. But they're just like, no, screw you, don't come here.
Well, and now Europe is going to take the hit because, right, they're having to start to turn people back.
Right.
And look.
Look, when Germany,
I just argued with this the other day about somebody about this the other day. It's not Europe's responsibility to take in the refugees of the world, nor is it ours. You know, I'm always amazed at how people say how horrible this country is until people from other countries are trying to get here.
Yeah. Well, right. Now, I mean, I think if we constantly call ourselves the greatest country in the world, then we may have some responsibility there. But when Germany makes you look cold-hearted, as some of these other countries, like making Turkey look stone cold, like, you probably need to recheck the way you're doing business. When the Germans make you look like they're the feeling ones, the Turks are coming off really bad here.
This is so complex, and I don't want to just make flippant comments about it, but whole Syrian thing and people leaving, and we've always said our position on this podcast has always been what? That the Middle East is a hornet's nest.
Right.
And it's hard to point the finger at one person and say, this is your fault, because it's always been this way.
But
holy shit, this
at some point, though, don't you have to learn? Like,
yeah. I don't know.
Again, this administration didn't cause any of this, but you got to know.
They haven't responded to any of it.
Well, I'm talking about the whole deal, right? I mean, because when you start talking about the reason for Syrian refugees, you get back to the reason Syria is on fire. And then we get back to the red line and all the other things.
Right, yeah,
and
absolutely.
You know, the Congress not saying, look, you can't go around us on this. And then when he said, all right, put it to a vote, and they said, no, we're not doing it. You know, so you could battle back and forth. But the bottom line is, in my mind, someone in that administration needed to sit down and say, look, as you just said, it's a hornet's nest. We either have to be in for a pound or we need to be out. You know what I mean? Like, you can't – this is not a halfway thing. You got to commit to this or get out of it, because it's a hornet's nest and there's no good end to it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah,
and we're kind of trying to dip our toe in here and help, and it's a giant mess. So you either got to step in with both feet or just stay away from it.
You know.
Is that off the
wall?
Yeah,
no, my take is that, say what you want about the Democrats, every time we have a Democrat as president, they know nothing about foreign policy. And this administration, as we've talked about with John Kerry as the Secretary of State, if you wanted to say, well, okay, we've screwed everything up to this point, let's impact the situation in a positive way, we're not even doing that.
No, because if you want to do that, you got to commit. You can't do this namby-pamby, inch at a time nonsense. And as much as Huckabee was just running his suck hole last night, he made one good point. The problem with this administration is they don't know what they don't know.
Right.
John Kerry should know. You can't go into this half-hearted. We got to commit to the Syria thing or just say, look, we're out for this one. And, you know, so it's just a giant mess. And we've contributed to the mess.
All right, we have. And we're going to talk about this more later, and oh, no, you didn't. All right, next. All right, Fran, our fifth favoritely infamous characters to talk about. I don't know how
your
to
boy.
Your Carlos
boy.
Danger.
Carlos Danger, Anthony Weiner, depending on what story you read, either left this PR firm or was fired from this PR firm. My question is, how in the world is this guy working for a PR firm? What PR firm would hire him?
And I think his quote was something like, well, I'm just moving on because it's turned out not to be a, you know.
But that's what you say when the company comes to you and say, look, you can resign or we're going to fire you. You know what I mean? That's the exact quote you use. Right. Well, I'm moving on.
Right.
Because they said to him, okay, you got by 9 p.m. today to say you're either resigning or you're being fired.
Sure.
So, but I just go back to what?
How does anybody hire this guy for PR for him? Right, right. I agree.
This guy sent his wiener to minors.
Right.
Pictures of his wiener to minors over Twitter. The whole time he's lecturing the rest of us on morality. That's the funny part, right? And look, when John Stewart won't touch you anymore, and these guys grew up together. They know each other from when they were kids. When he won't even touch you anymore, you're in a bad way.
All right, nice. Real nice. Carlos Danger sighting. All right, next.
All right, Francis.
Another one of your boys.
Your favorite quarterback and mine from our New England Patriots. I should say your New England Patriots.
Number 12 of the program, number one in your heart.
Tom Brady is a Trump supporter.
This started leaking out 2 weeks ago when someone snapped a picture of him by his locker and they saw a Make America Great Again hat stuffed in his locker.
Exactly.
And now he's just come out and endorsed him. I mean, it's just plain straight up the Tom Brady bump, I guess he'll be getting here pretty soon. And, you know.
He said there'd be a putting green on the White House lawn. I know that. So he just wants to play golf on the White House lawn.
Look, this Brady, dude, just a prick. Say what you want. I know you hate him because he went to Michigan and all that. Yeah, look, the dude ain't stupid. Tom Brady.
All right.
Endorsing Donald.
Tom Brady.
That may be the thing that gets him over the hump, dude.
Trump supports. It could be. With all those New Englanders that previously hated Trump and are probably jumping on the bandwagon right now.
Look, I have friends from this daddy blogger group that I'm in that are in math. Tom, if the Pope and Tom Brady appeared on the street at the same time, the Pope would be struggling to find someone to talk to. That's how they hold Tom Brady. They never for a minute thought that he did anything, and anyone who says something against Tom Brady is a heretic. So, if he endorses Trump, Trump just won the liberal Northeast.
Oh, my God. All right, next. All right, Francis, finally some positive news about a drone. Drones have been taking a beating.
This is another story for you. All these stories are for you tonight. Yeah, so this girl had been seeing how other people have been taking their teeth, you know, getting teeth pulled, and she was fascinated by that and decided she wanted to do something different when it was time for her teeth to come out, her baby teeth. And so a tooth got loose, and her dad said, let's pull it out with a drone. And they hooked a string to it, and I'll be damned if it didn't work.
So do a search for this on YouTube and check it out. There's like six people all standing around with their iPhones taking video of this. And the drone, the dad gets the drone lifted off, and he goes nuts.
Oh, yeah. You can hear him laughing the whole time. It's our era's version of the Three Stooges when they hooked the string to the doorknob, right? This is the modern version of that.
He hits the string to her tooth, and it must have been just ready to come out.
No, they said it was very loose. Yeah, it was very loose. Because that drone doesn't have that kind of torque to get that out of there. But
give yourself a laugh and check that out on YouTube. A drone pulls out girl's tooth. It's funny. All right, next. All right, Francis.
So here's reason number 387 not to go to Australia. Okay. They have spiders as big as houses. I mean, you know, it's a continent that just wants you to be killed.
There's a lot of dangerous animals there.
They just want wildlife to kill you and consume your body. So a couple pythons somehow found their way into some residents' toilets, and when one of them went to do their business, flipped the lid, and there the python coiled up in the water in the toilet. And this, you know, I don't know if you're aware, Australia is the personification of Texas. It may be a catchy saying that things are bigger in Texas. It's the freaking truth in Australia. This python is gigantic. Go look at the pictures of this python in the toilet in Australia. It's frightening. I don't know much about snakes, but pythons do not. I don't think they bite, right? They squeeze. Is that not true?
Well, they bite and squeeze.
Oh, yeah. So that's
taking... They're not venomous.
That's taking a piece out of your rear end, and this thing's huge. So it'd get all of my little rear end, I can tell you that right now.
Don't want it squeezing anything down there either.
No, but I mean, this thing is this thing's a body eater. I mean, it's huge. It's just gigantic. It filled the entire toilet, and they found two of them. So someone next door had one. I mean, it's like the epidemic of pythons crawling up in the toilets. I don't know. But yeah, so don't go to Australia, for God's sake.
Let's just it's just frightening. Let's just talk about something less frightening. Okay, so this next story sounds like it's better, but it's really not.
But it's
the headline is "Untidy Beds May Keep Us Healthy." But why do they keep us healthy?
Last, I knew you shouldn't be making your bed because the bed bugs are not as attracted to a ruffled bed as they are to a cleanly made bed.
Because when you're covered up with the covers and your body moisture, that is a breeding ground for these dust mites or bed mites.
Right, but leaving your bed unmade and crumpled up, that is not an attractive environment to a bed bug. But if your bed is flat and smooth and made, the bed bugs find that more attractive. Why that is, I don't know. But that apparently is the case. So they would rather crawl, much like with
lice. Something
lice,
as simple as leaving a bed unmade, this is a quote from the story, during the day can remove moisture from the sheets and mattress so the mites will dehydrate and eventually die. Which is frightening because I leave a lot of moisture normally. Here. There's a lot of moisture there.
It's a lot like the lice that prefer a dirty hair or a clean hair to dirty hair. Because the clean hair, they can get a better grab. And so that's kind of the same way. So, So let your hair get oily and don't make your bed. And I think you should be good. Right?
And that's okay. That's
what I take away from that, right?
That's the UF health tip
that's
of the
evening. That's our hygiene tip of the month.
All right. And that is Jiminy Christmas. That is shotgunning the news.
Oh, Francis. Now we can't. Now he's all itchy now.
I'm all itchy up here, Francis.
I'm going to have to go throw on some talcum.
All right. I'm going to go ruffle my covers.
Let's get hardcore.
All right, the debates, my friend. And if you're not on Twitter, if you didn't follow Twitter, you missed Francis's live tweeting. I follow Twitter on some things and some things I don't. I find to selectively follow certain things on Twitter is good. There's a lot of hate-filled stuff on Twitter. But
yeah, our Twitter feed's grotesque.
We
have a lot of lunatics following us, but there are lunatics, so so we keep them.
But anyways, the second presidential debates.
Let's talk about the first one, the minor league debate at six real quick.
Okay.
That's all that really needs to have to be said about it. And it was a freaking joke.
Yeah.
I would have taken, there was a political science professor from Wake Forest who said, to get the most out of that debate of the four candidates, you'd be better off not going. You would make a bigger statement by not going than showing up thinking you're going to shout yourself into the first debate like Carly Fiorina did. We're past that now.
Four guys need to go.
Rick Santorum, Bobby Jindal, Graham, and who was the third guy or the fourth guy?
Pataki,
right? Yeah, they're done.
Right.
All together, if you combine all four polls together, they're at 1.8%.
Right.
It's time to get out. You stop spending your money. That's just stupid.
Yeah.
Santorum, though, I guess of the four, had the best shot to advance himself to the big boy debate next time, and it didn't happen.
I heard that about Graham. But it doesn't matter. Those four are just done.
Yeah, they're done.
They're done.
There are four or five in the big boy debate that are done. They just don't know it.
Well, and we're going to talk about that later.
So
yeah, sure.
It was unremarkable, the first debate. Unlike the first time on the Fox, when the first debate yielded Perry and Fiorina, like, holy crap, okay, they're going to move up. Perry ran out of money, and it doesn't matter what your percentage says. As we've said over and over and over again, it takes money. If you ain't got money, you're out. So Perry's out. So Fiorina made the big boy debate. So she's the only woman on the stage of 11 guys. They let Rand Paul in. I'm not sure why, because he is like...
Well, as Trump said, he doesn't even deserve to be here.
Right. And he said something later about enjoy your 1% or something.
Yeah.
I mean, really, really sticking it to Rand Paul. I'm not sure why, because he's insequential fish. You know what I mean? Like, why waste your time with him?
Yeah. Well, let's start with Fiorina, because here's what impressed me about Fiorina. Everybody's going off about her. I mean, I read her book 10 years ago when she came out with her book, so I've quasi kind of followed her career. But here's what impressed me about Fiorina, is that the fact that she did so well in the first debate, got bumped up to the big boy table,
and backed that up.
That's a sexist thing to say, the big boy table, but she did. And then with all that pressure... Because that is like, okay, are you going to produce? And she just cut heads, baby.
Produce She whooped their ass. I mean, it was like... At some point, it was clear that a lot of these dudes weren't even going to take her on because they watched the bloodletting she did on Trump and Bush. I mean, she smacked Chris Christie around. I mean, and that's hard to do because he's a... You know, as much as Trump likes to, you know, bloviate, if we're going to use big words, Christie's he's mean. You know what I mean? He's a nasty person when he gets into this mode. And she kicked him right in the balls. I mean, you know... I just at one point I tweeted out, I said, "You better get your hands up, Chris. She ain't laying down for that crap. You're not going to come at her with that nonsense." And she did. And 10 seconds later, she busted him in the mouth. You know, she's professional. She gave specifics when and she was in policy questions. She intelligently and adroitly hit people when they were being snarky, and she understood economy of words. When Jake Tapper was asking those atrocious, pitting one against the other questions, like, "Well, Trump said this about your face, about your looks. What do you think about that?" He says people just misunderstood or misheard him. She gave one sentence.
That was classic.
Yeah. "I think the women of America understood him clearly." And that's it. And she shut up. Well, Trump didn't know what to do with that. And so he said some chauvinistic, you know, line of, "Well, I think she's a very beautiful woman." Well, that's funny because last week he said she's ugly as a dog.
Well,
who would vote
for her? And that was, and you know, so let's transition to talking about Trump, because I thought, if you imagine Trump as a big chocolate chip cookie, they started nibbling away at the edges.
She took bigger bites than everyone else, but yeah.
Because like that, for instance, he would have just been better off to have said nothing,
right?
Than to have said that stupid shit.
Yeah, and I submit to you that if that was Rand Paul who said that, he would have taken Rand Paul to the mat.
Yeah.
But he clearly was afraid of dealing with her because that ain't Megyn Kelly, right? He's not going to win that war because she's just a TV announcer. So he can pass her off as a bimbo. Fiorina is a businesswoman. She knows Trump. Like, he keeps saying, well, you know, his big thing always was, "Well, I know stuff about you. I can tell people if you want to keep running your mouth." She could do the same to him, and he knows that.
Right.
They run in the same circles. They run in the same money. So,
and
you know, he just didn't
stuff,
know what to
I
do.
Really feel like, and you know, I looked at Twitter today, and of course, now there's a huge negative response about Fiorina from all the Trump supporters, right? They're trying to push
psychos,
back.
Yeah.
Look.
They're zealots. I mean, they are zealots.
Oh, they're scary. Yeah. They're a scary bunch. And if you and if some Trump supporters are listening, look, I don't have anything against, well, I do have some things against Trump. I'm not necessarily against him. You know, I'm not out and out against him.
Right.
But damn, take it easy. These are all qualified
right.
candidates
right.
up there, and to respond in a hateful manner, as some Trump supporters have been doing, it's very liberal to me, and that makes you suck. That's what I think. But, you know, I think Trump was conspicuously absent on some very detailed policy discussions,
and even the minor policy, even like when there wasn't barb throwing.
Right.
He wasn't talking.
He's out.
Even the talk about marijuana, you didn't, I mean, that's a, you know, I mean, you and I could have stood up there and gone on for hours about that. He didn't even open his mouth.
Right.
Literally did not speak on that subject. And that's a big deal because people are pressing for that. I mean, I was a little surprised at how quiet he was at times. And then you kind of sensed the pattern of when he would be quiet.
Right.
Oh, they're talking deep. They're in the weeds now. And so he's not going to talk.
All right.
And
Rubio made that point once or twice when he said, "You need to be ready day one."
Right.
"Not 6 months." And see, Trump has said that several times. Well, I'm going to...
Because I'm going to have the greatest team. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
It's going to be fantastic,
yeah.
Francis. It's going to
be the best team ever.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Okay,
well,
Donald.
And Rubio, I thought, got a good 2-for-1 when Tapper said, "Well, what do you think about Trump, Mr. Trump not doing it?" He goes, "Well, why don't you ask Mr. Trump what he thinks about that?"
Right.
I think we need to know what he says on the issues. Why are you asking me what I think about what he knows? So that's a 2-for-1. You say, look, ask him about deep policy issues. And you know what, Jake Tapper, debate monitor? Do your own damn job. Don't sit there and pit me against Trump. I don't know, nor do I care.
But that was their whole deal.
Yeah, no, that was horrible. The only reason that debate was better than Fox is because Fiorina was on the stage. But they were no much better.
And, you know, I want to blog about this, Francis, because, you know, the point is up to this point, the debates, not the debates, but the Republican nomination process, it's a TV show, and
right.
Trump's winning the TV show.
Right.
That's all it is. It's a cult of personality.
Right.
He's winning the cult of personality because he is. He's a TV guy. Right. He knows how to be bombastic. I think last night we saw some cracks in that armor.
Yeah.
Like, look, if you're just going to be a bombastic blowhard, be one all the time. Don't, like, I think the, oh, I think you're beautiful, I think, dude, no. Just stick with your line. But yeah, let's talk about Jeb for a minute, because I thought he showed up better, but
It was still lacking.
Jeb Bush knows policy. He knows what the hell he's talking about.
Clearly, he's one of the smarter guys in the room.
But he is not. He's not a smart ass, and he don't get the kill shot. I mean, my thought was,
not so much the kill shot. He didn't even stick up for himself or his wife at one point.
I thought, if you're going for entertainment porn, you need to have the money shot,
right?
And like, he set Trump up for the, and you know, look, and my brother, if he was on the phone or whatever, would support this. I'm a smart ass. I come from a long line of smart asses. In my house at home, if you weren't a smart ass, you didn't survive. So, like, I'm watching Bush set Trump up on this casinos in Florida thing, and I'm thinking, dude, you've got him set up to take his head off, and you didn't.
Didn't do it.
You had to have that defining statement. You know, you had to have the walk-off statement, and Jeb is just not confrontational. That's not who he is.
Right. And that didn't show any more clearly than when again, Tapper with the nonsense TMZ style questions. Well, Trump said these things about your wife. How do you feel about that now you're standing right next to him? And Jeff's, well, I'm not, you know, my wife's right there in your life. She's loving my life. She's, you know, she's whatever. He needs to apologize to my wife. And Trump said, well, I'm not apologizing to her. I didn't say anything wrong. And Jeff said, oh, okay. I mean, like, dude.
It's a complete mishandling.
Why bring that up if you're not going to take Trump to the mat?
First of all, I follow politics, and when he brings that subject up, I'm thinking, I don't really remember what he said that was so offensive.
It was about Jeb speaking in Spanish.
Yeah, yeah.
And his wife is Hispanic, and so Trump lumped her in.
I mean, I knew that in a general way.
Yeah, no, the specifics, I don't...
But Bush needed to say, here's what you said that was offensive, and this is why you need to apologize, instead of this generalized...
See, I'd have gone the other way, because my first thought was, if Jeb punches him in the balls, he goes up 10 points in the poll.
Yeah.
But he can't do that, obviously. Yeah. So you do it verbally, and you say, here's what you said... But you can shove your apology, because we all know that'll be a lie.
Well, that would have been better, right?
Because
the worst thing you can do is ask for something, not get it, and just,
and then
like
what
you say.
Do? Right. Yeah. And you look like the guy holding the bag of poop that's on fire. What do you do? I mean, and then I would have turned to Tapper, and I would have said, and shame on you, Jake, because you want to just sling mud. All you want to do is sling mud. You're a serious journalist. What is this nonsense? You want me to try and beat an apology out of a guy who's never apologized for anything in his life? And we know that anytime he says anything of that nature, we know it's a lie. The guy's a snake oil salesman from start to finish. That's how you take a dude down without hitting him. And and Jeb, he just doesn't have that shot in his bag. So if that's the case, you need to stay away from those topics.
Or again, not to go back to Carla Fiorina, but you need to do what Carla Fiorina do. I have a definitive statement. You know, he made a statement about my face. They ask her about it. She says, hey, women everywhere heard what he said. That's that.
Yeah, and she immediately garnered the support of women in America with that.
And a lot of men.
Yeah, because they were like, damn, that was right to the heart. I mean, she cut him deep.
Okay, so let's go a couple more deep. Rubio, when it comes to foreign policy, he's got it down cold.
The best comment on Twitter about him was, this guy is hitting doubles and triples every time at bat. And then the one guy replied, but he's not getting enough at bats. And that was true. They weren't going to hit, but every time they went to him, he was just making the most of it. That guy is strong. He's smart. He's got a great shot.
He does.
Smartest guy in the room on a lot of those subjects.
Going down the row, Carson didn't. I didn't think that he did great. I didn't think that he did awful.
He was weird on the vaccine question. He capitulated to Trump a little bit.
That's
there.
A whole Trump. Somebody should have nailed Trump's ass on the vaccine thing, and we've talked about that before on the podcast. Right. Vaccinate your freaking kids, for God's sakes.
Right.
And for him to come out and make that statement and nobody, and to have two doctors in the audience, or not in the audience, on the podium, that really kind of capitulated to that was a shame.
They made the point that vaccines are not attached to autism, but they both capitulated to Trump on, well, you should spread them out. There's no evidence about spreading them out.
None whatsoever.
None. That's nonsense.
Yeah, and I felt like Carson, who's a world-renowned pediatric surgeon, and Rand Paul, who's an optometrist, one of them should have said, dude, you have no idea what you're saying right now.
Paul answered like a politician. Carson answered like a doctor, but then got bullied into accepting half of Trump's premise about the spreading it out. I've seen it, he says. I've seen the babies get these all at one shot, and that's
nonsense.
Dude, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. Shut your mouth.
Very irresponsible.
Yeah. He said, very irresponsible. And unfortunately, when Trump got into those types of issues, that's what his answers were like. Nonsensical.
Okay, Kasich, it was twitchy.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
He really
served himself well in the first debate.
Your voice just started to grate on you a little bit. And he kind of flip-flopped a lot. He was kind of all over the place. You never really got a sense of what he was really for and against, other than he was for winning and against losing. I mean, you know, it's just kind of like, it was hard to tail it down. And Walker, he went out for a sandwich at some point.
I have no idea what he said.
30 minutes he went without speaking.
I have even no idea what he said. All I know is that when he did speak, he looked sweaty.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, he was Nixon in 1960.
I know it.
Right? Like, he's melting under the lights, right? His makeup is dripping. I mean, yeah, it was brutal. He looked like a Muppet, as one guy said. He looked like a freaking Muppet. But 30 minutes without speaking.
Yeah.
And he has a great story to tell. He can stand up there and say, look, I'm the only one on this stage, although they all use that phrase.
Yeah.
I got recalled. I shut the union down. And I beat the recall, and I got reelected again. You got nothing that can hurt me.
Right.
And I mean, but he couldn't even tell his own narrative. I mean, it was just bizarre. And he'd just sit there for periods of a time, not speak, not do anything. Like, you know, hey, you might want to jump in here at some point, man.
Cruz, who was succinct, made great points and stared at the camera too much.
Yeah, you creepy bastard. Look at the people you're talking to. I guess he thinks he's campaigning to the people. It's creepy. But sharpest debater in the... I mean, it's clear that his reputation is accurate.
Yeah.
About debate skills. Yeah. But they won't let him talk. Like, they cut him off. They don't go to him a lot.
Right.
It seemed like he's getting a lot of airtime. But in total time, it wasn't a lot at all. He really didn't.
Well, and you know, I want to make a larger point here, because here's part of the difference to me. And Clinton took a lot of heat because people said, well, he just responds to public polls, right? He'll change his position based on a public poll, which when you really give it some thought, that's not necessarily a bad thing. That means you're kind of responding to what people want.
Which is
kind
of your job, because they elected you, yeah.
So you get this vibe from Cruz that he's a missile.
Right.
Right, and he's sharp,
yeah.
And he's smart, and he's efficient and effective, but he's a missile.
Yeah.
And if you ain't on his path, it kind of don't matter.
Right.
And Huckabee, who to me disappeared...
he is nothing. I mean, look, what we used to say all the time at the Academy, it was just a giant word salad, and his lettuce is rotten. I mean, it's everything he had to say. He made it very clear that he was one of the few people on that stage who was not a lawyer. If you could have had a camera on Christie when Huckabee was giving his answer about Kim Davis in Kentucky, I was surprised Christie didn't run down there and choke him. Huckabee doesn't know anything about the law. Everything he said is contrary to the Constitution and to the law and to legal rights. He knows nothing about that Kim Davis situation. He'd be better off sticking to the slavery analogy, because he don't know shit. Like, everything he said, I'm thinking, dude, watch one episode of Law and Order and you realize everything you said was a freaking joke. She doesn't have those rights. She does not have the right to use her religion to not do her job.
Well, you're talking about he was talking about
Kim Davis,
her getting accommodation,
right? Yeah, I mean, but not just that, but when he was saying things about it, you know, they're suppressing her cause, she's being a persecuted Christian. No, dude, she's persecuting other people using her religion to do it. They legally have the right, whether she accepts that or not, to get marriage certificates, and he's talking like, well,
not. I'll tell you. I think there's a larger conversation there. But
issue is he doesn't know the
law. Way Huckabee comes across is he's weighing in on that side of the issue, and that's it.
Yeah.
And so there's no.
He kept calling her Rosa Parks. No, she's not, dude. You don't know. I mean, He doesn't know what he doesn't know.
She is to her. She is to him.
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm saying. Yeah. He's going to weigh in on that one. And that's the comparison I was making to Cruz. They're on their, you know. And it's that evangelical Christian thing.
Right.
And
you cannot win like that. You cannot win.
And then there's my boy Rand Paul, who just... I love you, Rand. I stand with Rand.
Trump puts it in his ass every chance he gets. Enjoy your 1%, Rand. I thought that was the funniest line of the night. I'm like, I can't believe he just said that.
I know.
You know, and see, if that was like an NFL game or something, and something was happening where a coach yelled something, a camera would appear in the face of that other coach. They never went to Rand Paul. His facial reaction is what I wanted to see after Trump said, hey, enjoy your 1%.
Somebody that I read today, I won't take credit for it, but somebody I read today said, the problem with Rand Paul is he looks like a high school defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
I mean, he made a great point. Yeah. He's like, do you guys want this guy to be the president of the United States? He engages in personal attacks and sophomoric bullshit. Yeah. But it just comes off wrong when he says it.
It comes off smarmy.
He does come off smarmy. And
the guy's an ice.
I agree with Rand Paul on a lot of political positions, and early on, but he's just not.
You know,
he's not showing up. I don't know.
You got to
win on that stage.
Yeah, and his big thing was legalizing marijuana. That's where he got most of his play, and he made what appeared to be a good argument, and then Christie artfully dismantled that argument. I thought, you know, because Rand Paul said, you know, this is a victimless crime. It's only one. There's only one victim here, and it's the user. And Christie debunked all of that. And I would say to you, having spent a lot of time in Central America, to say that legalizing marijuana in the U.S. would make it a victimless crime. Because right now, you're getting your marijuana from outside the country, and there's thousands of victims. Because, believe it or not, in Panama and Colombia, families are being taken and made... forced into slavery to work marijuana fields. So that joint you're hitting in a state where you're not supposed to have it, there's a victim there at the end of that thing. So, you know, Christie was kind of going from that angle, and what Rand Paul was trying to say, if you legalize it in this country, you won't have that problem because people will just grow it. But he just got overshadowed, you know, because he let Christie shout him down, and, you know, and Christie just took him apart. Trump is just... Well, you shouldn't even be here, man. You should be, you're number 11 down there. Number 11. I can't believe. This is why people like him, dude. He's got balls the size of, bowling balls. I mean, it's just unbelievable. The stuff he would say. Like, the rest of these guys are looking like, I would never say that in public. And he's just shouting in the middle of a debate.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. If we left anyone out, who do we? That was everybody, right?
I don't think so. I think we've addressed everybody. So let's go now to our top five list, and let's talk about... And I titled this Top Five Debate Finishers, but really, this is the top five people that, in my mind, are left in this election. And I'm not counting the bottom four. To me, they're out already. So we'll go to our top five list next.
Five, four, three, two, one.
All right, Francis, UFUF top five, and this is who it's kind of a dual thing. Right. The top five who we think came out of the debate last night, and for me, it's really the top five who's left in the race.
Where they're going to be, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, and I have mine in no particular order, but you go ahead and start.
Okay, so I have my number five. See, let me just preface this. I don't have Trump in this because he wasn't in the top five finishes in the debate for me.
Okay.
But he still will be in the top five. I mean, God, he'll probably gain momentum the way his campaign runs. But anyway, so for me, this is strictly the debate order. And I've got at five, I've got Cruz. And I really just have him there strictly on his debate skills. I think he's, like you say, he's a missile. He's too divisive. But last night, of the people speaking, he was clearly one of the best at debating. And so I got him at five.
I took a different tack on my list. I really took, coming out of this debate, who's in the race. So it's...
Well, he would really be the only one I'd have to kick out because the other four I have in the top five anyway. So I would just trade out Cruz for Trump.
My number five would be Carson. I didn't think that he was. I don't know what the attraction to. I mean, he's a brilliant guy.
Right.
I like to hear him speak. I don't know that I want him to be president.
Yeah.
I don't kind of get it. But he's got, and certainly here in East Tennessee, they're mad crazy for him. But he would be, as far as who's in the race at this point, of course, Carson's polling second in a lot of polls.
Yeah.
He would be my number five. So
I have Carson number four for kind of the same reasons. You know, he's unremarkable when he speaks. He kind of speaks more in a high schoolish manner when he's talking about policy. And then when he got a ball handed to him that was all his about the vaccines and autism, he just wouldn't step up to the plate.
Right.
And they didn't really go to the only doctor who dealt with this with abortion. I mean, they could have went to him on Planned Parenthood, and they really kind of didn't. And he didn't really jump into it. So I got a four.
Okay, my four is Marco Rubio. You know, he's not polling well, but man, he's a brilliant guy. He's well spoken. He gives a decent physical appearance, even though somebody today said he's got an old man haircut. But,
he's the youngest guy in there.
I mean, he's got all the attributes. He's Hispanic. He's at my number four. Marco Rubio.
I got Christie at three. I thought he really helped himself. He was the old Chris Christie. You know, I think people have forgotten Bridgegate. If he's the nominee, that'll come back up, obviously. But, you know, no one hit him on that last night. He was strong and smart, and they're joking. And he's, as he says, he's the only Republican governor in a Democratic area of the country. And you know,
I got Christie in my bottom five, and I'll tell you why. And I'll give you my whole bottom five when I'm done. Because for me, the bottom five in this debate, it's like a football team that wins a game after they've found out they're out of the playoffs. It's nice to win the game, but it ain't going to make a lot of difference in the end. I thought Christie represented himself well as well. I don't think he's going to be a player.
Well, the thing is, you start coming out in the tops of these things, and your money changes.
Yeah.
You know, and if that happens for him.
It's true.
Because there were a lot of people backing him as the guy a year ago.
That's
so
true.
If he reignites those
lost
dudes,
a lot of that support.
He did,
but
that's what I'm saying. If he reignites those dudes, that could change his trajectory. And I think he kind of took one step towards that.
Well, based on that, my number three, of course, is Jeb Bush, because for a couple of reasons. One, he was a successful governor. Two, you can't listen to him speak and say that he doesn't know what he's talking about, even though you can look at him and much like his brother, you can say. He doesn't have retail appeal.
Yeah.
Right? He doesn't come off well as a public speaker. He's like a brilliant professor, right? Like you say to yourself, man, this guy really knows what the hell he's talking about, but he's not very entertaining in the delivery of it. But the other thing is, he got a lot of money. So
he does,
he's going to be around for a while.
Yeah.
So that's my number three, Jeb Bush.
So my number two, of course, is Fiorina. I think she just wiped the mat with everybody last night. She's just steady climbing. You know, she was a wild card in the last debate, and now she's into the second round of the playoffs, and no one wants to play her because she's whipping ass. I mean, smart, you know, wildly intelligent, good communicate. I mean, she looked presidential. Like, she looked like the one in charge up there. I mean, she just looks like she's freaking in charge. This would be my pick for the first woman president. Hillary would stand no chance against this woman. None, but she's kind of come out of nowhere. Everyone's trying to figure out, well, who's going to beat Hillary? Fiorina would mop the floor with this woman. I mean, she's just that sharp. So I got her at number two.
Well, my number two, I'll just go give you my two and one. My two and one is Trump and Fiorina. Trump, just because he's there, he's sucking up the air in the room, as we've all said. I think, as we talked before, I'm looking at Trump, this debate, like he's a big chocolate chip cookie, and people are starting to nibble around the edges. They beat him down a little bit in this debate. But he's still there, and he ain't going away. Of course, my number one is Carla Fiorina. I couldn't agree more, I think. It's hard to ignore.
Yeah.
And you know, of course, now, the day after, all the shit about Hewlett-Packard and Lucent and everything. You know what?
Yeah.
That stuff can come out about Trump, too. I mean, that's...
Well, and that's kind of what happened, right?
Take her for what she is.
Right.
Look at her in this debate and say, who knew what they were talking about? Who presented themselves well? Who spoke when they should speak and didn't speak when they shouldn't speak?
Right.
She to me, she was a clear-cut winner.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, I agree. And the other reason I don't have her at number one is she was great on foreign policy, but Rubio was head and shoulders
well, amen.
Above
sure.
everybody. I mean, he
sure.
just the kid is just sharp. He's good. You know, what a difference than when they forced him out there to give the State of the Union rebuttal a couple years, yeah. 3 years ago.
The only thing Rubio did wrong was he made that water joke, yeah. that fell flat.
Yeah, let it go, bro. Let it go.
Yeah, or practice or something.
No, drop it. He doesn't have the funny. He needs to be the serious guy in the room. He is, and no one wants to tangle with him. No one refuted anything he had to say about foreign policy, which was smart because they're all like, no, I'm not touching that because he'll beat me over the head with it. And he did. And like I said, he took on Tapper and Trump all in the same sentence. Yeah, I think you need to ask what he knows about these things. And still, Tapper wouldn't do it. You know what I mean? Still, I think Jake let us down as a moderator, but Rubio's he's good at this, and his only drawback is he's a freshman senator. And
so was he your two or your one?
My one. That's he was my your one. Okay. And I have Fiorina at two. She was good on foreign policy, he was better.
Yeah.
He was better. I could easily see this coming down to the two of them going head-to-head for the nomination as we get to June of next year.
Yeah. So my bottom five, the people that I think are out are Rand Paul, Huckabee, Cruz, Kasich, and Christie. I think
Christie out?
Yeah. You know, again, he typifies the metaphor I gave you earlier.
Yeah.
It's like winning a game when you're already out of the playoffs. I think he represented himself but I think he's lost so much momentum that in this cult of personality, in this...
Yeah.
TV ratings war. He's not going to win.
But I think there are other forces at play here that may work in his favor. Jeb was the establishment candidate. I think he's lost that. I think he's going to have a hard time staying in, other than the fact that he's got a ton of money. But money doesn't buy you polling. And if he's still polling where he is, he's going to have trouble. Christie, you know, the establishment may say, "Hey, you know, maybe you know he's back." And if they throw their money behind him, he could go a long way.
That's
you know what I mean.
It's possible,
and that's just a dynamic that doesn't exist for the rest of them. It exists for Christie because a year ago he was the establishment's pick, and the establishment wants a hunk of Trump. They want to get him out of there, and because they don't think they can win with him, and I think they look at Christie as, okay, this is the guy who can beat the Republicans, and we can have all our establishment norms with him, and so. He may have relit that fire for himself last night. We'll see as it goes on, but you may be right. He could be too little, too late, and he's out. I mean, there's, you know, it could easily be that way as well.
Well, that could be. We'll see what happens, but it will be interesting.
It's gonna. I would say see what happens from here. It's gonna. Traditionally, these things will start whittling themselves down now because after the second debate, if you still laid an egg like a lot of them did, your support starts to dry up. Like your bottom five. You're going to see a lot of these guys drop out. Like Perry couldn't, you know, he lost his support, couldn't pay anybody. So your campaign's over. If you can't get on a bus and go somewhere, if you can't get on a plane and go somewhere, if you can't organize a rally, you're out. Now, Jeb Bush had a rally today. 30 people showed up. That's bad. The optics of that was horrible.
Right.
And the pictures were flying all over Twitter. Now, he made the most of it. He shook hands, took pictures with everybody, and that took him about 10 minutes because there was only 30 people there. So... You know,
I can't imagine how much longer Scott Walker's going to last.
Yeah.
I mean, the bottom four, to me, they're just
out. At some point, these guys are going to realize mortgaging their house isn't worth it to keep going.
Yeah.
Because that's where they get to. And so, yeah, I agree.
Rand Paul, save your dignity, drop out now.
And he's still running for senator in Kentucky, so he can go back, you know, and be senator from Kentucky. So, yeah, I'm with you.
All right, Fran. Well, here we go. We're going to, of course, this is a thing we started earlier. We're going to read some Hillary email.
Nice.
Which is a lot of fun. Her release
emails. Actual emails? You have the actual hard copies?
I have actual hard copies of the emails.
Does the FBI know about this?
I have no idea what they know. And neither do they.
Emails, personal emails, yoga routines, family vacations, the other things you typically find in inboxes. Work-related emails. My private, personal emails.
All right, Fran. So they released some more on the 31st of August, I think. We've delayed this bit a couple of weeks. But we got some, and I'm going to tell you what. Our diligent staff filtered through all the released, found no yoga routines.
And I was looking for something to add to my workout.
So. Well, I just wanted to be able to say I did the same yoga routine. I wanted to see if I could keep up with her on a physical level.
I don't want to see you in yoga pants.
So, by God, I'll wear yoga pants.
I know you would. That's the problem.
I don't have a pair, but it seems like everybody's wearing them.
Don't lie. You know you got a pair.
So, here's a couple of Hillary emails that interested me that our staff. Here's the subject. Now, a lot of these are from Huma Abedin. This one's from Jacob Sullivan. And he sent Hillary an email about how Mexican treatment of undocumented immigrants. And just to sum it up, he was like, Mexican law enforcement officials cannot stop individuals who require proof of migratory status. However, they're doing that. Right? They're treating undocumented immigrants like unfairly.
Yeah.
And Hillary responded, another example of you should take the log from your own eye before criticizing the speck in your neighbor's. So
Hillary throwing down some gospel.
Throwing down on the Mexicans.
Yeah.
Maybe she could be Donald's running.
Maybe she could be the Mexican president.
Here's one, and I'm not going to read this one either, but it's a...
No, I'm kidding.
Okay, I'll read it. Because it really has nothing to do with anything. I just freaking think it's funny. Because it is to Lynn Forrester de Rothschild. Now,
why do I know that name?
Well, because she's just a rich, privileged bitch.
Okay. Well, that's my crowd, so yeah.
And here's the subject line. It says, miss you, Lynn. I would love to see you, but your days overlap with Karzai's visit, so I'll have to get that settled before I confirm a time, but let's make it happen. So I'm copying Lona and Huma so we can start planning. Much love, H.
Nice.
Oh, that is nice.
Look, man.
Hill Dog showing a little personality for the rich and privileged.
Right. That's right.
For you sons of bitches that think the Democrats are all about the poor.
Look, man.
Okay.
You know, the 1% lives a different life, dude.
I'm bitter. Yeah. Okay, let's see. Here's another one. Oh, this is a good one. So, Huma Abedin, who is Carlos Danger's wife.
Anthony Weiner. Disgraced congressman from New York.
Who, there's no sense here, because Huma, not a bad-looking lady.
No, she is, she's...
A liberal Democrat, but, you know.
You are such a pig. Go ahead.
I am a pig. Yeah. But the subject is email test. This is from 2010, Francis. So the email that Huma sent says, your, spelled U-R, your email must be back up. What happened is Judith sent you an email. It bounced back. She called the email help desk at state, I guess assuming you had state email.
Oh, whoops.
And told them that. They had no idea it was you. All caps. Just some random address, so they emailed. Sorry about that, but regardless, means your email must be back up. Are you getting other messages? Hillary responds from hrod17@clintonmail.com.
Nice.
I've gotten some message from yesterday. How about you? This is from 2010.
Right.
She's using her own personal server.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, from the FBI saying she was using it the minute she got on the job.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
she's not thinking, she didn't want to think about that.
So
you know?
Nobody knew anything about it, but this is from 2010. You know, that's all I'm saying. Okay, here's one from 2010. And this is, the last two are my favorite. This one, the subject is gefilte fish.
Oh, I think I've read this one.
Yes.
I think I've read this.
This was on Ellen.
Yeah.
Gefilte fish. And the message is, where are we on this? Now, we have Alexa with us tonight.
Where are we on the gefilte fish issue?
Alexa, Wikipedia gefilte fish.
Filter feeders are a subgroup of suspension feeding animals that feed by straining suspended matter and food particles from water, typically by passing the water over a specialized filtering structure. To see more details on that topic, take a look at the Alexa.
Alexa, stop. This is technology going wild.
Yeah.
Alexa, Wikipedia gefilte fish.
Filter feeders are a subgroup of suspension feeding
Alexa,
animals
stop.
Feed by straining suspended
Alexa, stop. Jesus, Francis?
gefilte fish?
I'm going to try this one more time because now I'm pissed.
Enunciate, bro. She's not hearing you.
Alexa, Wikipedia gefilte fish.
Bonneville Lock and Dam consists of several run-of-the-river dam structures that together
Alexa,
complete
stop.
A span.
I did this earlier, and she answered correctly. I actually tried this.
Well,
this
she's
is
off
live.
The reservation now. It might be time to put
she
her down.
She is. Alexa, it might be time to pull the plug.
She turned off.
Anyways, I did this earlier, and it worked.
Why do I feel like the house is now going to cave in now that she's gone dark?
We should be in fear.
I'm going to run to my van before something happens.
Alexa, Wikipedia gefilte fish.
Filter feeders are a subgroup.
Alexa, stop! Okay.
See, the
that's
problem
the last
is,
time.
You're giving her attitude now. You're just not going to get it.
Gefilte fish is some kind of Jewish.
Yeah, it's like
stuffed
sardines.
Fish.
Yeah.
With stuffed fish, right?
Yeah, but they're like sardines. They
Jesus, we've gotten all off track here.
You think?
I'm sorry, listeners. I'm pissed. I ran through this earlier with Alexa. You're screwing me.
Oh, she just shut down. No, no. She gave
I'm
you the hand.
Die in my sleep, Francis.
Gave you the hand. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're gonna succumb to some strange electrical accident.
Okay.
I can feel
I'm
it.
I'm unplugging you. Alexa, I'm unplugging you.
Sorry, I didn't understand the question.
Yeah.
I heard.
Oh,
yeah.
You're a dead man.
That's what they always say.
Yeah. You're going to take a blender to the face tonight. I can feel it.
Okay, we're moving on. The gefilte fish email. And last, but certainly not least.
Wait. Was there an issue with the gefilte fish?
I just thought it was funny. Gefilte fish. Where are we on this?
Yeah,
apparently there was
saying.
Some
Is
diplomatic
there an issue?
Issue with the with Israel getting their supply of gefilte fish or something. I have no idea. This is my favorite, and this is from Huma Abedin, and the subject is Bill. The subject is Bill recommends that you talk to Yang. I can see if he can do right after Greek call. Give a little more time, and Hillary responds. I know the Greek will.
Come on, that doesn't even sound funny.
Hillary responds, I know the Greek will last a long time, and I can't predict how long Yang will take, so this is not a good idea. But if I can finish the P by 8:20, then I can do as long as I'm done by 8:45.
Wow. Dirty email.
Oh, Hillary.
Dirty.
Doing the Greek and the Yang. That shit,
well,
I have
here's, here's
no
what I'm
idea.
Thinking. That Bill has named his penis the Yang, and that's what they're talking about.
I cannot imagine
Bill, of course, being Bill,
Bill putting his penis in Hillary. Yeah, I think it goes
Why?
Everywhere.
Why do you paint these images, dude?
You brought it up!
No, I didn't.
You brought up Bill's penis.
I just said he probably named it the Yang. That can't even be that far from the truth.
Well, that's bringing it up.
I didn't say anything about putting it in Hillary.
Okay, we're off the rails. This bit's done. Let's go to Oh No, You Didn't. Fran, did you hear about California is just going to start handing out high school diplomas to anybody?
Why not? Participation diplomas. What's wrong with that? Come on.
That's what it is.
The antique party hater.
Participation trophies. Apparently, if you go, hundreds of thousands of California people who flunked out of high school are going to get awarded diplomas.
So what's the why? What's the make it easier for them to get jobs?
Thanks to a new law that killed the graduation exam that California students have been required to take, many who didn't pass the test will now be able to acquire the education credentials they did not earn.
Graduation exam? Have you ever done that? I've never heard of that. Do they do that in Ohio?
Yeah, we had to take some kind of damn test.
All right. We didn't do that in Jersey. Of course,
there's a proposal for them to do this, and of course, Jerry Brown is expected to sign it because Jerry Brown is just a liberal piece of shit. Well, that's not bad. Well, it's what? Not. Let's not connect bad decisions to smoking dope.
Why not?
Well, for reasons I don't want to go into detail.
Are you telling me people who smoke dope don't make bad decisions?
No, but let's just separate the issues.
Well, he's in California, dude. You know he smokes dope. That's how it works, right?
I don't think that's fair. But oh, yeah, I got no
problem. Now we're talking fair?
I got no problem with with participation trophies for six-year-olds. I got problems with high school diplomas for people that don't pass some kind of standard.
Well, see, I that's foreign to me then. We didn't do that. Like, if you got the grades, you graduated. There was no final test to take.
Apparently there was in California. Well,
but maybe it was screwed up and these people got screwed out of a high school education. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I don't think that's what it is.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, what if you go through your 4 years and you have a grade point average high enough to graduate, but you don't pass this graduation test?
The state of California is and this is from Hot Air, the state of California is poised to award thousands of high school degrees to dropouts by passing a new law retroactively removing the requirement to pass a high school exit exam.
Right, but do you understand what I'm saying? If you go through 4 years of high school with a grade point average that's passing, and you fail this final exam, how does that nullify your high school career? You know what I'm saying?
It's an issue about the testing.
That's what I'm saying.
Like,
how is it that those 4 years don't count because you didn't pass this graduation exam after you've completed all your coursework with passing grades? I mean, I would have a bigger issue with it if these people didn't have passing GPAs. You know what I'm saying? Am I not understanding that properly?
Well, if you're talking about standardized testing, and you've arrived at that standardized testing by some objective means, then yeah, I think that's an issue.
Yeah.
Which is what I think they're trying to say here. Because,
I mean, I get that if you should be able to pass the
California High School Exit Exam was created in 2004 and it is intended to make sure that students have a rudimentary grasp of English and mathematics before being awarded a high school diploma.
But wouldn't their grades in all those subjects show that they have rudimentary skills in those areas? You take mathematics in high school. You know what I'm saying? Don't the final exams in those classes indicate that you have rudimentary skills? I don't understand that. I'm lost as to what the point of that test is.
I think in a fair and upright world, but I think that's an assumption.
I think so. I graduated high school taking Algebra 1 and 2, and I passed those classes.
What they're saying here is the test isn't that hard, and it only covers 8th grade level material and can be passed if students answer 55% of the questions correctly. So what they're saying is that if students get passed through high school, they still have to pass this basic knowledge test to get a diploma. And that now they're saying that students that don't pass that test are going to get a diploma anyways.
Yeah. So it's just a foreign thing. Like, I don't
so
get
in,
that.
In society, if you hire a person or you have a person that has a high school diploma, you expect them to have certain skills. And what California is saying is they may not have them now. They're just going to give them
the diplomas. What's keeping them from getting hot, getting jobs? So we're just going to give them the diploma.
We're just going to get. Well, I don't know if it has anything to do about jobs.
Well, but
it's
assuming.
A participation trophy. Hey, if you finished high school, we're going to give you a diploma, whether you met some previously established standard or not.
So they're going to give the exact diploma that someone who went through all the hoops gets.
That's what they're saying.
It's not going to be a different style of diploma, like a GED style. You know what I'm saying?
Nope.
Just going to be straight. Yeah.
They're just going to give you a diploma. Say you passed high school.
So from kids, from
which in a society which is trying to reemphasize the hard sciences, you know, math, science, chemistry, all those kind of things.
Exactly counter to what the administration wants to do.
Yeah.
Of which Brown is a member of that party, so that's a little bizarre.
Yeah.
But he's a freaking Fruit Loop anyway. I mean, he's such a. You know, he's such a wild...
Okay, so my next oh no you didn't is we spent $500 million to train 4 or 5 Syrian fighters to fight ISIS. Now, we've talked about this before on the podcast.
Is that like a sale or is that...
I just wish I was getting the money to train people. I could probably train 7 or 8 people. I could
for
double
that money,
it.
I think I could.
For that money, I could double it.
Yeah, I could take on 5 or 6.
And this was... It came out in the Senate... You know, a Senate hearing yesterday, they were talking to.
This is what DOD spending this money or Pentagon spending that?
Yeah.
That's not some.
This is United States of America.
Well, you know what I'm saying, though. Is it CIA training? Like, what branch is training them? Does it not say?
I think it's Department of Defense, yeah.
Well, I mean, if they're being trained.
The U.S. military has spent $500 million, and we've trained 400 to 500 fighters. We were only supposed to train 100 to 200 in the beginning, but apparently, I don't even know what that means.
That clip, that'd be a ton of money. Holy crap!
I don't even know what that means that we've trained 4 or 5 fighters. What are these guys sitting in a room somewhere smoking cigarettes? They're not out there with machine guns pulling a Rocky or a Rambo.
Yeah, what would be the point of training just 4 or 5? That doesn't seem to make
sense. This is $500 million. Now, let's just think about this. How many hungry people could 500 million feed? But this administration spent $500 million to train. So basically it says to me, they're not really trying to do anything.
But I mean, the military, this is not exactly off the charts for the military to do things like this. I mean, McCain has made a career of dropping the hammer on military excess spending. And you know what I mean? Like, you know, you hear about the $300 hammer and the $400 soap.
Yeah, but that was kind of an 80s thing, right? We were supposed to have tightened
the shit. Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, just because those lines appear in movies, I'm not sure that made the practice stop. You know what I mean?
Well, it should have if we're spending $500 million to train 4 or 5 guys.
I agree with you.
And we were originally supposed to train a group of 54.
Which slightly makes more sense. But at 4 or $500 million for 5, 54, do the math. Which we're not really going to do because we're not good at that. But that's a lot more money. You know, at $500 million a clip for just 5 guys.
I don't know, Francis. I mean, my brain's blown
out. Talking about, you're talking about billions of dollars if you train 54 at that price. Right?
Yeah.
Right? Are we not talking into the billions now? I mean, if 500 million gets you 5.
It would be nice to think that somebody would go, hey, wait a minute, guys. We got to do something different.
Where were they housing them? At the Ritz?
I mean, I don't know.
What in the world?
Really?
Would you? I mean, a gun and ammunition for life wouldn't cost you that much. I mean, what exactly are they getting?
Some nice hookers, I guess.
Gold tip shoelaces? And what in the world?
Holy shit.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
All right, Fran, as I talked about earlier, let's end the podcast on a cheery note.
Yeah. Good luck sleeping tonight.
My first sign of the apocalypse is Michigan health officials have confirmed the first ever case of plague. Yeah. The plague, the Black Death, bubonic the freaking plague in a Michigan resident. And they're saying that it's the 14th case nationally this year, which is 3 times. I guess normally we have 4 cases of plague in the United States.
4 and a third, yeah.
You know, so now we've got a case in Michigan, which is just a couple states north of us, Francis. The plague. It's the freaking plague.
Yeah. Well, I think, though, what people don't get is the plague still exists in the United States in some animals. In Arizona, if you move to Arizona from out of state, your welcome package from the state is don't screw with the squirrels. They have plague. So the plague still exists in the country in animals. This is the first time it's appearing in a human.
And they're saying that this resident returned from an area of Colorado that had plague activity. Yeah.
So the southwestern creatures, there are creatures out there who do have it. And apparently in certain states you get these briefing like, don't touch the animals because they got plague. But this is the first time you ever heard of a person getting it in forever, right? I mean.
Well, it's the first ever case in Michigan. It's the first ever case.
But it's not the first case in the U.S. in forever.
No. They're saying we've had 14 cases in the U.S., which is 3 times the national average. So what? Apparently, every year, 3 or 4 people in the United States get the plague. Okay. So next. DARPA creates a prosthetic hand that can feel objects, which initially, and Francis, you posted this story.
Yeah.
And initially I said to myself, well, this is... I got about halfway through my first sentence. I said, well, this is a good... No, wait a minute. This is the Terminator.
Right. Yeah, so they create this prosthetic for this dude. They wire it, you know, into his brain.
Connected directly to his brain.
And he was able to feel with it. He was able to have sensory perception with that prosthetic hand. An arm. That is stunning. I mean, just think about that for a second. There are positives there.
It'll
never be used for that, but there are positives there. DARPA is the very, if you don't know, Google them and then unhook all your equipment because the government will come for you. But, you know, they're the shady black ops people of the nerd world. Like, they sit there and think up all this crazy crap to control minds and things of that nature. And so they figured out a way that a paralyzed man could use a prosthetic and feel. That's the thing. It's not like he was missing his arm. He was, but he's paralyzed. You understand? His nervous system isn't working. And so they figured out a way that in his mind he could feel the objects and the things they were doing to that prosthetic while it was attached to him.
Right.
We're taking a step to the singularity here. This is the thing. What's his name? The guy telling along with the physicist in the wheelchair, and then the other guy saying, "Hey, you don't want this.
No, this is bad."
What's the other guy's name?
I can't remember. I never remember when we need to remember. But yeah, this is DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency.
Yeah,
which is going to be the ones that invent. The Terminator.
Right. Skynet. They're going to invent Skynet. And it's going to be all over for us. But think about that. Think about that for a second. Let's take it out to what may not necessarily be a wild conclusion. They've got this thing hooked to his brain. It's not hooked to anything else, right? It's hooked to his brain, and he's feeling with it. Are you telling me that they haven't put something in there to where they can monitor the performance of that prosthetic from a laptop that's not connected to him? You know what I'm saying? That's just a wireless signal. It wouldn't take much to put that in. So they would be able to know what he's doing, when he's doing it, and how he feels about it. Like, they're inside this guy's head. And they could, you know, and they could monitor that with a laptop from God knows where. They would always know where this dude is, and they would know what he's holding.
And they can hook something like that up to a computer, remotely control it, and have those sensations.
Right, and who's to say they couldn't control his arm for him?
I'm a Cyberdyne Systems 2001, would mean I learn.
Yeah. So, look.
But that's what it is.
Look, that's a leap, I get. But it's not all, you know, there are good things, and then there are other ramifications, and we're just here to point those things out.
Well, and it's all about this, is that humans create a lot of stuff, and at some point somebody uses it for stuff for something bad.
And Elrond, whatever his name is.
Elrond Hubbard?
No. Ron, isn't it Elrond?
I don't know.
The guy who basically says, we're going to make the machines that will wipe us out.
Oh, yeah. I can't think of his name, but
he's a... Yeah.
Yeah,
he's involved in the SpaceX and all that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that. I mean, we've talked about that many times.
Elon Husk or Musk or something.
Yeah, yeah. And he says by the time we create it, it'll be too late to stop it.
Right?
Because
that's the plot from Terminator.
You may not even get this podcast.
And what Hawkins is saying is, he's piggybacking on that and saying he's absolutely correct.
Yeah.
And you might not even know that you've been, like, it might seem very good to you for a while, and by then it'll be too late. Like,
well, it does.
You won't know right away that this is bad, and then it's too late.
Well, I mean, we're sliding down the ladder to Alexa, Wikipedia gefilte fish.
Gefilte fish is an Ashkenazi Jewish dish made from a poached mixture of ground deboned fish, such as carp, whitefish, or pike, which is typically eaten as an appetizer. For the full Wikipedia article, check out the Alexa app.
Well, thank you.
Okay, so let me fill in the gaps here. So she was basically giving him the finger while we were on the air. When that bit exploded and we decided to go off the air, he did it and she answered properly right away. So he wanted to make sure you all knew that he wasn't losing his mind.
No, I may be.
And she is still going to put a blender up your ass tonight. I have a feeling. You need to unplug all your objects.
Oh, I do. Dude, yeah. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You don't think I have been doing that for 6 months?
I don't know why you let her in here.
I just got a big switch outside the house. It's like off and on.
You need to get yourself like on the Matrix. Get yourself an EMP device so you can let off a blast if you have to protect yourself.
Holy shit. So, wow, what a big podcast. Yeah. Francis, we had a big podcast. It was big. It was huge. It was
the best one ever.
It was the best one ever. Next week we're going to have even a better one.
It was huge.
It was huge.
You don't say the H. It's more of a Y. It's
huge. Huge. All right, 107, we're putting it in the books.
Do it in the Barney Frank voice, dude. That's what I want. The Barney Frank is just the greatest ever.
I hate you on why we...
I don't know why that makes me laugh every time. I have to consciously not think of that when I'm driving home because I'm going to crash. Oh, my God.
Good old Barney Frank.
You people don't get the visuals. That's really part of it, but it is hilarious. Holy crap. All right,
107 in the books. Hey, thanks for listening. And we'll be back next week with 108. And I'm sure there's some crazy shit that's going to be happening. Fran is still laughing. So stay safe, stay sharp. Life is a highway. Remember, I have no idea. Jonah, please.
Good night. Miss you.
Until next time, stay unfiltered and unfettered.